So the first presenter is Chen Ling Chen, and she's going to speak on pronunciation of particles, communicative strategies, and language.
Okay, so good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Just a brief introduction of my research. I'm a linguist and I work on phonology of Austronesian languages. But I started to work on the language from 2002. It's more than 10 years. But later on, for the recent 10 years, I found a lot of social linguistic changes. So that's why I got the mixture pronunciation research here. So I'm going to study the mixture pronunciation and also the particle and the speakers. They use that as a communicative strategies in face-to-face conversation in two Paiwan migration languages. So I'm going to introduce the Paiwan language later in the next slide. And I found that community-based approaches, especially to language pedagogy, has implication for this language maintenance. And I found also the interaction between those strategies and also linguistic structure and also affective stance, they have the quite relevant. And I used acoustic phonetics method and also sociolinguistics method to verify those existing varieties. And so Paiwan is a language spoken in southern Taiwan. And for my past 10 years, I worked on the native communities because actually my hometown is exactly here. I'm not a native speaker. I'm a native speaker of Mandarin. But I met those people from my childhood, and there are about like 50,000 speakers, but getting less and less. My parents told me I should not talk to those people because they are from the mountains. But once I get to the graduate school, I started to study linguistics, and I figured out, you know, that they have very, very different language linguistic structure from Mandarin. So I started to study in the native and migration communities in those area and rural area, and later to the urban areas. So those are the original communities I've been studied. And all the speakers, although they are minority language, they are minority speakers, but they are aware of they still have some varieties among the dialect. Even this indigenous language still have the dialects. Because they have the different phonological structure. But the question is that the geographical boundaries among those dialects are not solid. And the elder speakers, they are aware that the turns and longs are from Japanese. However, Mandarin and Taiwanese words are also borrowed into their language, especially when they refer to law, business, transportation, technology, and Chinese festivals. It's a basic situation in Taiwan. They settled on the Taiwanese territory about 6,000 to 8,000 years ago, and only 3% of the population speak Austronesian languages, and Mandarin is the dominant language. But we also found a slightly steady shift from indigenous languages to Mandarin, especially for the second generation. But those language use at home often varies across generations. So it's in a rural area from in the very far remote area. It's they already have the migration because usually when there is an earthquake or disaster, typhoons, they have to move the location to the original location to a migration area.
This is the second study, the recent study, Language Documentation and Conservation. Today is March 3rd, 2017.
So that's an urban area.
This is Saramanak Room, and it's 2 o'clock p.m.
So they move about like 20 miles away from the southern part to the central part, where I'm working with. And I got the informant the speakers ages 20 to 68. So here is the heritage languages situation. Usually these heritage languages, they cannot obtain equal status with the dominant language. And when the host Language is the only language supported by the mainstream society. Learning this heritage language may rely heavily on family, especially this family network. So when the parents, they value cultural maintenance and also speak the language at home, this may increase the likelihood that the children would like to speak that language. And also, there's a basic literature review. I just want to move quickly into my research. So that's the first study in a rural area, when in a village, about like 700 residents, and almost all the people speak the Paiwan language. And however, the younger generation, they already speak the Mandarin. I got the phonological varieties among those speakers. That's in the rural area. And that's the inventory, and that's the vowel inventory. And there are two types of stress. And so I use the acoustic methods to measure where the stress is. So here's a basic stress pattern, but first of all, I need to test about 500 basic words, and I need to record elicitation from 30 speakers. And I also use the face-to-face conversation, about 180 minutes of interview. And I divided them into three age groups, below 40, 40 to 60, and above the 60 years old. And that's a measurement for acoustic phonetics. So it's a mixture pronunciation I found in rural area. First of all, in this language, the stress should be on the final syllable when the second last, the penultimate syllable is a schwa. However, in this mixture pronunciation, we got the font in red part as a mixture. So they have these kind of dialectal variations. It's a basic, first step of sociolinguistic findings. I got that more than 70% of the voice token have been reported to be standard among the age elder people, like the age 40 to 60. However, below the age of 40, most of their phonological variation was attested, and we found that the effect of age was significant. And there's a communicative strategies in the village. So in the culture, they like to share food with everybody. So they often say, "That's it," as like, "You're welcome, that's it." So, and thank you, they have a different form, like a masalu, malimali, and the java, okay? And this is relative later on the particle, they use the polite particle very often. So I found that there's a considerable shift toward Mandarin at work. And kids, they usually speak the language to receive compliments. When they, in the village, in the native village, when they speak the Paiwan language, the elder people will say, "Oh, you are a good kid." And then the kids will be very happy. And sometimes they give the rewards, even the cash, like $5. "Oh, you speak the mother tongue. You are different from other kids, so I give you $5. And the kids will be confirmed, like they will be pleased. And however, in rural area, the pronunciation was used for negotiation, also asking for favors. In the urban area, that's a different kind of situation. They moved to cities for various reasons, but mainly for work and also intermarriage. And in these urban areas, they feel a little bit isolated because the majority are Mandarin speakers. And the urban Aborigines, after intermarriage or migration, they tend to live in the same community just for security. And they speak Mandarin and Taiwanese in the workplace where the Taiwan is only used in their family. So I interviewed some of the participants, including the first and second generation, and I used a different word list and also the same age group. So they reported there's no problem with their hearing or for just recording. This is a basic test of lexical distribution. And this is the situation I work in the urban area. So I'm the investigators, and I use this kind of situation, face-to-face conversation to do the study. So this kind of interaction talk, they feel more relaxed. And usually we talk about like some days holiday, they enjoy a social drink. But the problem is that in the urban area, they came from different hometowns, as you can see from this column. They have the different dialect of Taiwan, like Tsalasib, Kwapa, Mazazayazayam, or Kuala Lao, they have different hometown, which means that they have different phonological varieties. And that's a basic review of the contact. They do have the dialectal variants, especially for glottal stop and also for their palatal lateral. This is the basic variation. And here is a mixture pronunciation I got because I interviewed the family A. Supposedly the son would learn the language from the father because the mother is a Mandarin speaker. This is an intermarriage family. However, they have the neighbor, like Aunt A and Aunt B, and they have the different dialect. The father and the son should be from the same dialect, and the different neighbors, they are from different dialect. However, you can see the son use the features like this one. This is the father's feature, but this is the aunt's feature. So when the son get acquaintance with the neighbor and talk more with the neighbor, they would have this kind of mixture pronunciation, sometimes with the father, but most of the time they will stay with the aunts, the pronunciation. It's a general summary about the features of this phonological change, including the diphthongs, uvular final stop, strong vowel is preferred, and also the long vowel. And this is just a summary for the age and mixture pronunciation. We found the old informats, usually they don't have much of this mixture, but the young and the middle-age informats, they have this kind of mixture. It's a daily expression among the second generation. You see, usually the second generation, they don't speak the language very often, but when they speak the language, usually the recipients are the family members. So they would say like, ouch, this kind of particle, or go take a shower, be quiet. But the problem is that they overuse very polite form like bye, the particle. Usually, originally, the particle is used to introduce suggestions to something or make common like abrupt. So that's like a polite, please, more polite. Used to as conjunction to introduce new development in narrative. So usually they would say, let's look at, could you please be quiet? With the bye, it sounds more polite. But the problem is that they use it too often. Could you please excuse me? Or could you please let me pass the way? Something like that. Here's the overuse of the particle among the second generation. For instance, when they use that, when they want to say be quiet, they say that twice. Be quiet, please, please. They try to use the their mother tongue with the particle politeness particle more often. So, for instance, they would say, don't keep singing, please, please, and then take a shower, please. But the problem is that when they use this kind of overuse of this particle more often, they got the positive responses from the in face-to-face conversation, regardless of the age of the Taiwan recipients, because I think they want their kids to speak the mother tongue regardless of whether it's overuse or it's a standard. So, and the recipient's confirmation is a key factor in young speakers' willingness to apply their language. So here's a local heritage language education. So the local language curriculum does not agree with the idea of mother tongue rights. And small amount of time was devoted to local language instruction, about like only 2 hours per week. And the heritage languages are learned more as a second language rather than mother tongue. And the language education in the migration community is mostly for individual uses, and the challenges include like a target population, syllabus, teacher supply, resources, and evaluation. So that's a community-based approach to this kind of language teaching. Basically, they use one textbook, and the teacher is from the other dialect, and they have 3 students from different dialects. So that's the question, that why they have this kind of mixture pronunciation. So especially like student one will speak their dialect pronunciation, student two will speak their pronunciation, student three also speak their pronunciation. But the textbook is another pronunciation, a little bit different. But they all use their one and they also use the textbook version. So they got this kind of mixture pronunciation. So the instructor, the For the training program, they should include this kind of extensive knowledge of the native language, especially this mixture of pronunciation. And we found that it's very practical for this kind of community-based. And also in their teaching, in addition to proverbs, our sayings, box sounds, integrative, and also progressive curriculum should be developed. And they should have like a formal evaluation for the kids to understand that how fluent they have been learned. And so these are examples for particles in communication. They use the by, this kind of polite form. And it's almost the time. Okay, so it's a discussion about language maintenance and immigration. We found that when they have the frequent contact with other speakers, they may facilitate the retrieval of this Aboriginal pronunciation. And they like to use the language, and when they like to use the language, they got more familiar with their prosody of their speech. And this kind of production of mixture pronunciation that actually has a link with the identity of the language maintenance. So most of the parents or the first generation speakers, they perceive the language as more intimate. And we found the link between the language and also the identity. So the speakers, they spoke Paiwan to elders and mixed Paiwan and Mandarin, the dominant language, to the peers, and also they speak the Mandarin to children. And second generation, they learned this kind of mixture pronunciation in their intergroup interactions. So that's a summary. We found that the overuse of this particle could be one of the communicative strategy because they want to get a confirmation or get to initiate the native language code in their conversation. And when they live there longer and also with the contact with the community member, it's much more easier for them to facilitate this kind of mixture pronunciation. So we describe this kind of community-based approach. So we found that it's relevant to their identity and also security. And I also found this kind of comparison between the native and migration varieties reinforced the understanding of these kind of sociolinguistic factors. And we found that if we want to develop a community-based curriculum, we should include this kind of pronunciation choices and also this kind of communicative testing, assessing their, especially young children's proficiency and accuracy. And that's all. Thank you. No, it's a stress language, stress language. But the second generation, when they start to speak their mother tongue, we found that because they learn Mandarin as the first language and their mother tongue as a second language, and because their mother tongue is not a tone language, we will find that they have some like tonal features. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they apply, it's kind of the other way. For acquisition, they, for instance, they start to speak their mother tongue from 6 or 7 years old. One of my students was a native speaker of Paiwan. He learned the language from 20, and when he started to speak the language, it's like it sounds like a tonal language, but it's not. They start to apply some features. It's quite different from the features of the first generation. The first generation, they speak the Paiwan language, but when they speak the Mandarin, you can hear the accent. But the kids, when they speak the mother tongue, you hear the accent of their mother tongue. So that's the other way.
Yeah.
Yes?
Do you have cases of code switching, like
Paiwan
and Mandarin?
Very, very often, especially for second generations. When I did the study, I showed the pictures with the interaction, but usually the kids, they will keep silent until here. I try to show the interaction with the speakers here. The reason that I didn't interview them individually, unless in the classroom, they also have this kind of situation. For the second generation, they started to learn their mother tongue normally from elementary school. And for most of the time, they speak only like particles or something like ouch, very, very little isolated words of their mother tongue. So for the kids, I need to speak Mandarin to interview them. Otherwise, they don't understand. And my Taiwan language is not as fluent as the first generation. So for the most of the time, I use the Mandarin. But you can find a lot of like the parents speak the mother tongue and the kids answer in Mandarin. I think that's very normal in like a minority language conversation. Yeah, they use a lot of code switching. Usually their mother tongue and the Mandarin. Yes.
I'm just wondering whether you have studied this operator model code switching or tried to study it in some way. Because in my, I'm working in not a similar situation, but of course in an endangered community, which is multilingual and which uses a lot of code switching.
Yes.
And from the very recent investigation that I've made, I discovered that I don't want to call it code switching, but it's kind of, I call it code charge. That is, they use codes according to what I call it the frame of discourse. So depending on whether they are dealing with like private issues, family issues, public, you know, they tend to map codes with specific frames
situations.
This is just something that struck me, and I was wondering whether you noticed some kind of modeling of this language.
Yeah, in school, in education situation, institution languages, of course, Mandarin. They have to use Mandarin in school. But the problem is that they are losing the languages. So when they speak at home, usually they still switch. When they don't know how to say that word in their mother tongue, they switch to Mandarin. So it's kind of like inevitable situation. Like since they don't know their mother tongue very well, then they have to select the tone that the code, so-called the code.
Survival
code switching. For survival.
You mentioned the teaching materials that and different dialects. It's basically that slide. So, are the teaching materials in all of the different dialects?
They do. But because the Kuala Lao, the dialect, it's the where nowadays there's one Taiwan dictionary. It's developed based on the dialect. So that's why the textbook adapted from that version. But I understand that for some of the dialect, they also try to develop their materials. So far, I don't want to call it according to geographical situation locations, but they divide it into like a northern, southern, eastern, western, some kind of very rough terms, but not exactly reflect the situation of the speakers. They try to develop different dialect, but for the instructor, because the government supported this dialect, they have to select one textbook. They cannot select 10 textbooks for one, a small, minority language. They just select one as the as the textbook.
I was wondering if that creates a standard dialect, and also if you see if kids are using one dialect as a textbook, if that has effects on their pronunciation.
They could change. Yeah, thank you. That's the situation. And in that situation, they will follow whatever the teacher teaches them. But at home, they switch automatically to the way that the parents are speaking. But usually, as far as I know, I interview some families and some parents, and most of the parents, they will tell their children that you just follow what the teacher told you, because that's when you do the assessment, you want to get a good grade. You have to please the teachers. Mm-hmm. You have to follow the version. So my point is that the instructor should understand they are from different dialects. So when the students are speaking different pronunciation choice, they should respect or, you know, not say, this is wrong, this is an arrow. But it's a little bit difficult because the instructor also from one dialect. So that's a situation I think the minority groups are facing.
The differences didn't seem drastic, the pronunciation differences. And were there grammatical differences also? Or
no, there are not so much grammatical errors or not. The grammar is more stable, but I mean the pronunciation. They are aware of the differences, but and they don't really distinguish it. And they know that, oh, you are from that village, you are from that village, but they can communicate with each other. So, but originally my linguistic typology is to try to figure out the varieties, but after I follow those group and after migration, I found that maybe the dialectal variations that's so important for native speakers. So I mean, like a linguistics point of view, is not exactly what the speakers need. They don't really need, you know, typology or classification. They need to, you know, understand each other's pronunciation for their communication. Yeah.
Then who decide standard dialect?
The government, or we have like a indigenous people's council, the government official institution, and just like you say, when the chair of that institution is from one dialect, then maybe he would have some preference, or maybe from some suggestions from one textbook.
There might be some criteria to decide, okay, this is a standard dialect.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think the government, they have the authority, regardless of the, you know, the different opinions of those native speakers. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.